I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Marty Beckerman joins me from New York City this morning. He is the author of a new book, Democracy, Adventures with the Loony Left and the Rabid Right. It is a stimulating, thoughtful, provocative, sometimes rude, but often funny book on the American political landscape. He spent 4 years with extremists on both sides of the aisle, and he exposes their fanaticism and how they are ruining the country with their failure to compromise on a wide variety of issues, whether it's the First Amendment and free speech, political correctness, gay rights, drugs, sex, abortion, and more. Marty Beckerman is the author of Generation Slut and Death to All Cheerleaders. He has written for Playboy, Reason, Discover, The Huffington Post, and New York Press. He has been featured in and on countless outlets from the New York Times, Fox News, NPR, and MSNBC. Hunter S. Thompson once called him a morbid little bastard, which to this day he considers the greatest compliment of his career. Democracy is published by Disinformation and retails for $18.95. His website is martybeckerman.com. On a personal note, I am very happy that this book has been published because of the trials and tribulations its author has had in getting to this day. Please welcome once again to the Plant Online program, Marty Beckerman. Good morning, Mr. Beckerman.
Hello, thank you for having me on. You make it sound so serious. Why so serious?
Well, it is a serious time, isn't it? In your country, at least, is it?
It is an extremely serious time, and the forces of blind ideology are really, they're on the march now. And our country is being overtaken by this poisonous political discourse, this crazed, paranoid, conspiracy thinking, and I'm not really sure that it's going to end after the election. I think what's being unleashed now is going to be with us for a very long time.
In writing,
it gives me something to joke about.
It does, yeah. In writing this book, though, was there some attempt to change that discourse?
You know, I don't know if it can be changed, because extremists, radicals, might not be able to analyze themselves and moderate. I guess maybe some of them can. But really what the book is about, I spent 4 years with these extremists on the far left and the far right, and really come to the conclusion that it's the same rageaholic tendencies, the same hatred for freedom of speech and pursuit of happiness, and really the same unhealthy psychologies that would drive people to extremism in the first place. And I think that being a radical of either side is equally dangerous to the freedoms that most Americans and probably most people cherish.
Before we get into the book, I want to ask you about Sarah Palin. You grew up in Alaska, right?
Yeah, I make the joke that she's trying to make this election about city moose versus country moose.
Where is Wasilla compared to where you grew up? You grew up in Anchorage, right?
Well, I grew up in Anchorage. Wasilla is sort of the, I don't want to sound like an elitist, but it's the redneck suburb of Anchorage. It's about 40 miles away. And it's really surreal for me that, like, growing up, we sort of looked down on these people, and now one of them could potentially be the leader of the free world. I think that she is incredibly dangerous. Not merely because she's a woman. but hey, Hillary Clinton would have been qualified to be president. Sarah Palin is a culture warrior. And really what Democracy, what my book is about the culture war. And I don't know if you have something like this in Canada. I guess I don't follow Canadian politics that closely, because, you know, we're so insular here. But what she's really doing is firing people up against one another and stoking these embers of hatred that have been lingering in our culture. And really, our economy is collapsing. We might not be able to afford bread soon. We might be turning into Mad Max. You know, we might be cannibalizing one another for protein and essential vitamins and fun. And I think at a time when our economic institutions, our financial institutions, are on the brink of disaster, this is a time for Americans to pull together and not to be at one another's throats, which is really happening. And some of what's coming out of the radical right-wing base really is slightly too reminiscent. And I would normally say that this is a snide comment and a paranoid comment, but when you really look at some of the crazy stuff coming out of the McCain campaign supporters, it is incredibly reminiscent of Europe and Russia and China in the 20th century. There's a mass movement being unleashed of pure ideological hatred. And yeah, I think it is really dangerous, increasingly dangerous every day to the stability
all the girls in Alaska like Sarah Palin?
No, most of the girls in Alaska aren't that hot because we don't have that much sun, you know? not the best skin, I guess. No, I guess in some ways she's quintessentially Alaskan. I've never hunted a moose. I hear that it is gamey. I never had moose. It's weird because in a way I feel proud of my home state. In another way, it is sort of horrible.
Well, one of the interesting arguments that you make in the book is that America is essentially centrist. For someone in Canada, like myself, who's viewed American politics for a long time and regularly, we seem to hear the tenor of the debate seems to be of America being a very polarized country. But you argue that it is essentially centrist, is it?
You know, the moderates are a quiet, silent majority, and the extremist radicals are a very loud minority. Because most of us are happy, or at least have things in our lives that make us a little bit happy, whether it's relationships or hobbies. You know, for me, it's alcoholism, you know, vicious alcoholism. But for these lunatics on the fringes, all they have is politics. All they have are their political crusades, their culture war. All they live for is victory and eternal conquest of the other side, which really isn't realistic in the first place. I think a lot of these people are really, truly demented. A lot of them had screwed up childhoods. By the way, we're not regulated by any code that says I can't use bad language, right?
No, absolutely not.
All right, so fuck them. They are demented, disturbed people who have a very limited grip on reality. On the one side, on the right, they want to install the Book of Revelation as our foreign policy. And, you know, on the left, on the far left, there's no sense of humor. There's a complete disdain for freedom of speech if it offends anybody. And, you know, it's the same thing on the other side. I think the best example of how the radicals are the same is from Indianapolis, Indiana, in the 1980s. Now, normally, radical feminists and the religious right don't like each other over that tiny little thing, abortion, that tiny little issue that people get a little bit riled up about.
Right.
vacuuming fetuses like they're household dust bunnies. but which always makes my weekends entertaining. I don't know about you. Now, normally, the radical feminists and the religious right don't like each other, but they got together in Indianapolis in the 1980s. Because, obviously, the religious right doesn't like pornography and blasphemy and anything immoral. And the radical feminists didn't want anything that they felt subjugated women or offended women. So they actually passed a law, which they passed in Canada as well. So this relates to your listeners. That says, any book or film that offends a single woman and is placed on a government watch list by one citizen would be immediately banned, illegal, to sell in bookstores and stock in libraries. And actual real literature, like the Iliad and James Joyce, was banned because of this crazy decision, and it was overturned soon after by a superior court because it was so blatantly unconstitutional, so blatantly, overturning the First Amendment, which is something that most Americans cherish. Most Americans cherish our right to say what we want. And it's really just these extremists who want to shut down the other side and silence the other side and silence debate because they can't have a conversation. All they can have is the sound of their own voices screaming. And I feel that they're incredibly dangerous. So, really, I'm not comfortable with a radical leftist any more than I am with a radical conservative.
But one side is...
fuck them.
Yeah, there you go. Obviously, one side is creepier than the other. Which is it?
They're equally creepy. That's what I just said. I think in America, I would say at this point in history, the right is much more powerful, and the pendulum very much needs to swing to the center. But, you know, if you'd asked me that question 10 years ago, people were being fired and getting in trouble all over the place for comments that are completely innocuous and taken out of context. You know, one of the things with these extremists is they constantly want to be offended. They like to be offended. There's actually been neurological studies that show that political extremists have different brains than the rest of us. They feed on anger like a drug. Okay. So in the 90s, there was all this crazy stuff, like at a university in Hawaii, a biology professor is dissecting pig fetuses, and he refers to the baby pig. Now, the pro-choice club then proceeds to get this guy essentially fired, silently retired, because he referred to a baby pig fetus, which implies that fetuses are babies, which implies that abortion is infanticide. Now, I don't think most of us would have drawn that conclusion from our biology professor referring to a pig fetus as a baby pig, but these nut jobs on the left and the right, just they want to be angry all the time. They want to be pissed off and want to push it on everybody, and they can't shut the fuck up. So they always have to have these crusades. And so, you know, left-wing radical cultishness is just as terrifying to me as the right-wing variety. It's just at this moment in history, the right has taken over America, and the new political correctness is, well, if you criticize our foreign policy, you hate the troops, and you hate your country. And if you criticize their censorship or their morality legislation, suddenly you hate God. You are anti-God, or you are part of a culture of death. Now, most Americans are pro-life in the sense that nobody is for abortion. Nobody is for a doctor-assisted suicide and thinking that it's a great thing. I mean, well, with abortion, don't ask me in the middle of a movie theater or an airplane when there's a baby crying, because I might have a different opinion then.
Yeah, right.
On abortion. But the arrogance to say that half of your country, half of your fellow citizens are part of a culture of death, but we are the culture of life. Fuck them. Same bullshit, different day.
But what do you think the role of the media has been in all of this?
Well, like I said, the radicals are a loud minority, and they get featured in the media because they're making their voices heard, whereas most people don't feel the need to constantly be angry and talking about politics. Unfortunately, the irony is, for me, I've got to promote this book, so I'm constantly angry and talking about politics, so maybe I'm no better than them. You know, the media in America, people like to blame the media, and there's certain media outlets that sure deserve the blame, but I think it's sort of part of a paranoid thinking that, oh, the media is against us, and a lot of conservatives think that the media has a liberal bias, and a lot of left-wingers believe that the media is controlled by corporations, and therefore was forward or right-wing bias. Listen, I've worked in newsrooms for the last 10 years of my life. Journalists are lazy and usually drunk. You know, our bias is usually toward which kind of scotch we like. So, I don't know. I think there's certainly biased news outlets out there. At the same time, sometimes it's good to expose yourself to news outlets and ideas that you don't necessarily like. Because a lot of people put themselves in an echo chamber. And I did this too in college, and around the time I wrote Generation Slut, actually after it was published, I started hanging out with some really conservative people and put myself in an echo chamber. I went way too far to the right. And it is the greatest error in judgment I've probably ever made, and I'm haunted by it and deeply ashamed of some of the things that I wrote in the wake of that. But it gave me perspective to say that the center is usually where the healthy people are. But it's good to not be in an echo chamber, because when you put yourself in one, you and all your friends are going to push each other further and further and further in that direction, whatever it is. And if you don't listen to other media outlets and you don't hear other opinions, your political opponents become monsters under the bed. They become boogeymen under the bed. Whether it's this perceived Marxist conspiracy between journalists and scientists and teachers, you know, for right-wingers and radical Muslims who are going to come to our shores and install a caliphate and put us all under Sharia law, which, you know, is absurd. Or, you know, on the left, thinking that every single person in the heartland is a Bible-thumping, you know, mutant who wants to lynch gay people. And you know, most people are decent. Most people are decent and good and centrist. It's just that we're not the ones screaming, except for me. So, you know, that's my job.
So how do you people in America get away from this left-right conundrum and then move to the center?
How do we get away from this? Well, you know, the way our system works, and you can tell me if it's this way in Canada, to get nominated by your party, you need to appease your base. Is that pretty much what happens in Canada?
Yeah, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, it's probably everywhere in the world. You need to appease the most radical aspects of have your own party before you can vie for the centrist vote. So everybody runs to the extreme and then runs back to the center. Well, the problem with that is that, you know, the politicians we're going to get are beholden to interests that a majority of Americans would not support. And what's really tragic with John McCain, who used to be the most centrist and beloved politician in America, and he had a huge problem with the Republican base, though, because he wasn't for repealing Roe versus Wade, and he was pretty centrist on a bunch of other issues. He did not like the religious right. So he had a bad reputation among the crazy base, and to placate them, he has made, and he's an American hero, and nobody can take that away from him, and we have to honor his service, and you know, all is good and fine, but he has made an abomination, a horrible parody, a grueling jackal out of himself, pandering to the most deranged and dangerous elements of the American electorate for victory. He and putting forward these policies that he probably doesn't even support, but we don't know. We don't know anymore. So I think there's a huge problem with the way our system works, where our politicians have to make whores of themselves to get into power, and it's really playing out now.
Do you think Obama has done that as well?
I think Obama solidified his base much earlier and has been playing to the center much longer than McCain has, because McCain, ultimately, he had to give the gift of Sarah Palin to the Pentecostalists and the evangelicals and that crowd. He had to give that gift before he finally solidified their support. Obama had the support of liberals early on, and now he's been vying for the center for a very long time. But I also feel that, at least the safe thing for me to do in this election would be not to endorse anybody and to say I hate everyone or they're both decent guys or something. Truth is, I'm voting for Obama, I'm endorsing him, and I think that he is a much more mellow and restrained personality type, and which is what we need now in the face of economic crisis and foreign policy crisis. I'm getting a little bit too sanctimonious here. I should try to have some fun with this. But yeah, that's who I'm voting for. And, you know, a lot of people in this country get upset, well, you know, he's black. And it's kind of like, well, you know, he's half white. Isn't that worth something to you people?
I've been reading you for a long time now, nearly 10 years probably, ever since I found you on the internet all those years ago. How do you think, with this book and your other work, how do you think you've changed as a writer?
I think some elements are the same. You know, the humor is probably about the same. I don't go quite as far as I used to, and I think, in a way, I'm sad about that, because there's certain things that I could write in the past that I just couldn't get away with now. A 17-year-old, 18-year-old can say certain things and not be, you know, brought to court and executed for, you know, the same things that a 25-year-old can say. Well, I can't quite get away with as much. At the same time, I don't feel the need to shock so much as I feel the need to entertain now. And I think in the past, I made a lot of comments just to get a rise out of people. Even, you know, they were over the top, and some of them were pretty good. You know, some of them were pretty hilarious. But
they were great, yeah. They were great.
Yeah, and I mean, I still try to be funny. I still think Democracy, in a lot of ways, is my funniest book, because it will probably appeal to more people than the humor of some of the previous books did. So yeah, I think my humor has evolved. At the same time, I look back on my earlier stuff, you know, I'm happy about it. I just couldn't necessarily do all of it again today. For example, getting fucked in the ass with a dildo would still be pretty hilarious, but, you know, I think I'm just not as courageous. I'm just not that courageous anymore to take it up the ass with a dildo and then, you know, write about it for the sake of journalism. I've become weak in my old age. My rectum has become weak, Joseph.
There you go. The press release that I got when the book came described you as a comedian. Do you do a lot of that comedic work, like stand-up?
You know, no, I don't. I do some readings every now and then, and I try to make those funny, but it's been frustrating in a lot of these radio interviews. The hosts expect me to be a comedian. I guess that's the press release.
Yeah.
I have that to win. People are like, why aren't you being funny? And, you know, I consider myself a humorist. I'm much more comfortable with that word. I'll say, to a degree, I think I'm a comedian, to a certain degree, I guess. I'm more comfortable with the word humorist, though, because that implies, I guess, a little bit more literary bent, because, you know, a lot of writers can be really funny, but when you meet them, they can be really boring. boring people. I interviewed Matt Taibbi, a writer for Rolling Stone.
He's great,
isn't
he? To
do an interview, and I think he's a pretty good writer.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
And his writing is hilarious, but then when you actually meet him, I mean, I sat the entire interview for an hour waiting for him to make a joke, and none came. So I think, to a certain extent, a lot of writers who are funny on paper, when you actually meet us, we might be a little bit drier than you expect, but, you know, I still love to make people laugh, and I'll try to do it, but I would not say that I'm anywhere near Chris Rock, you know? I'm not anywhere near that level of saying that I'm a comedian. I do love Chris Rock, though. He has a great line, which I've been quoting a lot, that relates to the book, where he says, no thinking person is 100% liberal or 100% conservative. A thinking person picks and chooses on the issues. He says, listen, I'm conservative on crime, but I'm a liberal on prostitution.
To close, Marty, you dedicate the book to Dr. Stephen Edgell. Who was he?
Okay, like I mentioned before, in the wake of Generation Slut, I got a lot of hate mail from left-wing readers, which I was shocked because I was a liberal then. I was still a liberal, and all these left-wingers really hated the book, and I couldn't figure out why. Now I look back and I understand, well, you know, maybe making rape jokes and feminist rants together, anti-feminist rants with the rape jokes, was a pretty awful idea, and it was, I mean, we were talking about maturity. Listen, that's how a 20-year-old talks. I'm not a 20-year-old. I'm not a 19-year-old anymore. I'm not a 19-year-old boy anymore. The testosterone has cooled off a little bit. I've mellowed out quite a bit. And I look back at a lot of those interviews I did, and even the book to a certain degree, and I feel a little unnerved by it because the testosterone is raging. That's when your hormones are peaking when you're 19, 20. And I went on a lot of really angry, unhinged rants, which I can now look back on and say, well, those were not temperate. And they're actually maybe even a little bit creepy. You know, I do feel pretty unsettled when I read those now. I can understand why people were so angry with me. But moving on. Also, with feminism, I've been able to distinguish, well, there's moderate feminists, and, of course, the feminist movement needed to come, and, of course, the sexual revolution needed to come. When you study more history, you see the necessity of that. I think when you get out of college and into the real world, you see the necessity of that. At the same time, yeah, there's radical, you know, crazy bitches, and I write about them plenty, and democracy.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, moving on. So, in the wake of that, in the wake of all that left-wing resentment toward me, I did the wrong thing, and I started hanging out with people who are super, super right-wingers, because I thought, well, they hate the people who hate me, and the enemies of my enemies are my friends. So I started hanging out with the college Republicans, and I'm still friends with some of these guys, but that echo chamber and that atmosphere of really constant hostility toward minority groups and sexual minorities and on, I mean, it poisoned my mind. I became someone that my friends and family and girlfriend did not recognize. I became filled with hatred, just like the people that I'm writing about in Democracy. And filled with resentment and filled with paranoia, and I really became a right-wing true believer for a short time, for I guess about a year. And it was the biggest mistake I've made in my career, because a lot of people associate that, me with that. Even now, I was at a party like a couple weeks ago, and this girl, I introduced myself to this girl, this writer, and she says, wait, aren't you that guy who wrote a book that said women shouldn't have sex? Yeah, like I want the human race to die out. I mean, I do, you know, I do hate the human race, but not because they fuck each other. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Right? But, so I became associated with this right-wing personality that I had, I believed it. I really believed it. I was a true believer. And Stephen Edgell is a psychologist, was a psychologist in Arizona. And he emailed me. He read one of my right-wing interviews. And he's a left-wing psychologist, and when he was my age, he was a conservative as well, and then over time, he started talking to people and started seeing patterns in society, and started realizing that this anger is really an unhealthy thing. And over about a year, we emailed back and forth and talked on the phone every day for a year. And I've never been to a psychologist. I've never been in therapy. I don't know, I guess it depends who you ask if I should be or not. My mother might say yes. the right-wing beliefs that I had totally bought hook, line, and sinker, and started making me see that this hatred is, look all over the world, and anywhere you go, you know, this unthinking rage is really, really dangerous to almost every society on Earth. When people stop criticizing their own beliefs and analyzing their own beliefs and accept everything on faith, they become very dangerous. So he made me see that, and just as I was starting to come out of that fog, that haze of loathing, just as I was starting to come out of that, he actually died of a heart attack. And I was talking to one of my right-wing friends that day, my new right-wing friends, and I told him that I have an atheist friend who just died. But I hope he was wrong, I said. My atheist friend died, but I hope he was wrong, because, you know, my right-wing friend said, well, why do you hope he was wrong? And I said, well, because I hope he's still out there somewhere. I hope he's looking down on me and, you know, looking down on his family and all that. And my right-wing friend says, well, if he was wrong, he's in hell. Yeah, and that was the moment. I would pinpoint that as absolutely the moment when I looked at the ideology I had swallowed, and I looked at the friendships I had forged, and I really said to myself, this is fucked up. And that's really the moment when I started my journey back to the center, which I feel is a much healthier and much sober-minded place to be. And, you know, I still like to go on the tirades, and I still like to make the over-the-top jokes, but I feel that my temperament has very much calmed down, and I can only hope that more people in this country and around the world experience a similar journey of chilling the fuck out, because if there's anything this world needs, it's a whole lot of people chilling the fuck out.
What's next for you, Marty?
I'm finishing up a novel, actually a sequel to Generation Sweat in some ways, and yeah, trying to pay my rent, and like I said, the American economy is about to collapse, so I look forward to joining a gang of cannibals and trying to survive in a cave somewhere.
There you go. Marty, congratulations on the book, finally. It's a tremendous book, very funny, very thoughtful, and I urge everyone to buy it.
Thank you very much for having me on.
The book is called, you're very welcome, the book is called Democracy Adventures with the Loony Left and the Rabid Right and American and Other American Idiots in 1895 from Disinformation. MartyBeckerman.com is the website for the commentary. I'm Joseph Plana.